It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore pathways to finding and sustaining a life of recovery from substance use and a story of hope and healing. Please be mindful that parts of this conversation are sensitive and do take care. There is space to talk. Call in with a question for a recovery advocate and share 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Caroline Beidler is membership and outreach manager at the Association of Recovery in Higher Education, former director of Wisconsin Voices for Recovery, and her book is called Downstairs Church, Finding Hope in the Grit of Addiction and Trauma Recovery. Caroline, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. I am thrilled to be here this morning.
I want to talk about identity to you and how you see yourself through your identity. Your experience with alcohol and drug addiction started before you even turned 14. And then after years of sobriety, you describe yourself as a woman in addiction recovery. How important is that identity to you?
I love that question. And identity is such a important thing to think about, whether we identify as being in recovery or not. I love to think of it as, you know, we're all in recovery from something, whether your thing is addiction, food, social media, fill in the blank. And for me, I've spent a lot of time thinking about identity because traditionally in a lot of recovery communities and spaces, one of the ways that we identify is by saying, you know, hi, I'm Caroline. I'm an alcoholic, or hi, I'm Caroline, I'm an addict. And for me, that is true. That is 100% true. And there's more to the story because I am also a woman in recovery, and I am also, you know, a community member and a mother and a wife and so many other things. And I think for me, being able to look at myself more holistically has been a really healing process, that I don't have to stay stuck in this place of sickness and disease, addiction. I can live in freedom and hope while also never forgetting where I came from.
Something to me that really stuck out in the book is how that addiction is not some moral failing you write, or it's a reaction of the brain. It's a medical condition. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So, you know, as my experience, you know, professionally as a recovery advocate, I learned some really interesting things about addiction, alcoholism, and drug addiction that, you know, back in the 1930s, right around when Alcoholics Anonymous was actually starting, the way people, and certainly before this time, but the way people looked at addiction was that there was something inherently wrong with you, that it was about poor choices and, you know, that moral failing, something, there's a set of defects, or, you know, it was a choice. And, you know, we know now from neuroscience and a lot of research that that's just not true, that addiction, whether it's, again, alcoholism or drug addiction, is a medical condition, that there's something happening in the brain, and that also there is a genetic component to it. And so there's a lot more going on than just choices. And so what's been beautiful to see over decades has been this movement away from addiction as a moral failing and something that should be kept secret and hidden, that there's something wrong with us, to a movement of, let's bring this topic into the light and let's look at the science, which is telling us there's something happening in the brain here, and let's come up with solutions and treatment and recovery support services that can support that. And I love, you know, there's advocates all the way back from Marty Mann, who was one of the first vocal female advocates that came out of the Alcoholics Anonymous movement. And she actually received, you know, kind of kudos and, you know, go on ahead from the founders of AA. And, you know, at that time, for a woman to be speaking publicly about, it was her alcoholism, was really, I mean, this was incredible. You know, people had never seen anything like this before. Of course, she had tons of pushback, but that was really the beginning of this vocal advocacy where people could actually, you know, talk about this in public. And you know, thankfully, we've been moving in that direction. There's still a lot of work to do, though, around that issue.
Caroline Beidler with us. New book is about addiction and trauma recovery. It's called Downstairs Church. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You describe the process of addiction recovery as excruciating. You use that word. And you also say the path to better health can be freeing. How can people better understand the difficulties of recovery?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, and still a lot of folks, you know, historically addiction has been seen as simply a moral failing or choices that we make. And I remember early on, especially as a teenager growing up in a small town in Wisconsin in a rural area, I mean, I had not just friends and some family members, but there was just this general misunderstanding. You know, I started becoming labeled as, you know, a druggie and a junkie and a loser, and that I was making all these poor choices because I was a bad person. And, you know, and this just layered shame on top of the difficult situation I was already experiencing through addiction at such a young age. So, you know, my experience, especially early on, was so challenging because I was working through not only my own addiction, which, you know, for those of you, I'm sure, who are listening, you know, addiction affects at least one in three American families. And so either you yourself may be struggling with it, a family member, you know, a neighbor, a colleague, but it's maddening because I remember, you know, waking up and it's like in my mind, I didn't want to do this thing, you know, this thing being using drugs or alcohol that day. But something inside of me, and what I've now learned is, you know, patterns, thinking patterns, and what was happening to my brain through that substance use and how things were changing. I was doing the things I didn't want to do repeatedly over and over and over. And it wasn't until I had this interruption in that habit, an interruption through things like social support and addiction treatment, and what I didn't know at the time were recovery support services, that ultimately propelled me into a new place of hope and freedom.
As you mentioned, you're a native of Wisconsin, and you were a UW-Madison student. How did our state's drinking culture affect your upbringing?
Great question. Well, you know, I don't know if y'all have been in Madison on Saturday, you know, football game days. You drive through the downtown and it is everywhere, you know, college campuses across the country and really globally. It's almost a societal, you know, norm. It's normal to have this glamorized view of drinking and drug use. And as a college student, especially when I went in to get my bachelor's degree in the early 2000s, I remember just feeling so alone. You know, I was a student and there were 40,000 other students around me, and I had no idea that there were other students like me trying to maintain recovery and abstinence from substance use. I had no clue. Fast forward 10 years later, when I went back to get my graduate degree in social work, I learned about something called collegiate recovery, and that across the country, there were these programs being developed at different universities, usually by students in recovery like me, to help provide social support and provide this alternative path for students. Because the reality is not everyone does use substances or, you know, drink at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, you know, football Saturday. So these programs I learned about, and I actually got involved with a bunch of other students in recovery, and we built one on the university campus that's now called Badger Recovery and has gone through several iterations. But now that there is that support. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons I am a huge advocate of collegiate recovery and do some work with collegiate recovery now, is because it is pivotal to have these social support, these recovery support services on campuses and really in all stages of life, so that folks like me, folks in addiction recovery, can find a safe place to land and get support.
Caroline Beidler with us, author of Downstairs Church, about addiction and trauma recovery. You can join in along the way. Call in with a question. You can share thoughts about sobriety, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As addiction is a chronic but treatable medical condition, we explore stories of healing and solutions for more effective faith-based recovery tools. Please also be aware that this is a difficult topic involving trauma, and take care. Join in at any point. Number to call in with your question, your comments about recovery, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Recovery advocate Caroline Beidler's book is called Downstairs Church. Caroline, you mentioned that statistic, nearly 21 million Americans in addiction recovery at some piece or point of it. And you say that more than half are women. Are there some common reasons why women develop substance use or addiction?
Thank you for that question, Kate, because that's actually something I've done quite a bit of research on, and the findings are really interesting around women and substance use disorder. And there's research showing that actually since COVID 2020, there has been a steady increase in substance use disorder, particularly alcohol use disorder, and certainly struggles with opioid use disorder since the pandemic began. And not only are women facing increased rates of incarceration for substance use disorder, which that was a new statistic I recently learned. So women are incarcerated at higher rates than men for substance use related issues. But there's actually less available support for women. And so recovery housing, which is something I've been a huge proponent of and continue to be, there's fewer recovery homes across the country, including in Wisconsin, for women. There is less services for women with children, and women also face greater stigma for substance use disorder, in part because oftentimes women are primary caregivers, whether that's of children, parents, other folks. So women face a very complex set of kind of challenges in this, and along with that, and I talk a lot about this in my book, but my own experience with trauma, research shows, I believe it's from the National Institute of Drug Abuse, did a study and found that over 80% of women in recovery, 80% of women in recovery have experienced some type of trauma, most often sexual violence. And so, and those rates are even higher for women incarcerated. The percentages are upwards of 90% of women who are incarcerated because of substance use related issues have experienced most often sexual violence or sexual abuse. And so when we look at how to address and provide support, and we think about addiction recovery for women, considering all of these intersecting areas, especially how to address trauma, is so, so vital.
Let's take a call now. Mary in Vilas County. Mary, hi, go ahead.
Hi there. I lost a family member over a decade ago now, but and this individual had really serious alcohol addiction issues. But one thing our family found, and they were in, I think, four different inpatient treatments over the course of like 30 years. And, and then they would be dry for a while and then, need to go back. But what we found in all of these programs is that other mental health issues were not addressed. The focus is on the addiction, on the alcohol. You're an alcoholic. And if you don't consume alcohol anymore, then, then you're in recovery. And, this individual was never able to do many of the things in life that a lot of us would hope to do because their mental health issues, which was a obsessive compulsive disorder, were just not addressed as part of the treatment. And, a person is a person and it's all interrelated. And I hope things have improved because, it was a serious issue for our family. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Mary, thank you so much for sharing and for calling in. Caroline, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. And I just want to say I'm so sorry for your loss. So sorry. And, it's a great question. I believe, thankfully, things are changing and have changed over the last decade. Certainly, there are still areas for improvement. And you bring up such an important point that it's so much more than just the addiction. Mm-hmm. I've heard it described as, addiction is a symptom. It's just a symptom of other things going on. And so whether it's obsessive compulsive disorder or anxiety, depression, untreated post-traumatic stress disorder, most oftentimes there's some underlying co-occurring challenge that's going on when the addiction, you know, presents, the symptom of addiction. And so it's so important that not just mental health providers or treatment providers learn how to address both. So if you're seeing a therapist for mental health, that they can address and be supportive of or make that referral to addiction treatment, and vice versa. If someone's receiving addiction treatment, that those other areas of need and challenges regarding mental health are identified and the appropriate supports are referred. So again, I'm so sorry that your family experienced that. And I do hope that other families don't have to go there, and that, you know, states like Wisconsin are changing their approach to addiction treatment.
Support groups depicted in movies as people sitting in chairs, arranged in a circle, taking turns sharing stories. How accurate is that depiction of group recovery programs?
100% accurate. Recovery can happen in a lot of different settings, but that picture of a circle of chairs, I actually recently started a new newsletter on Substack called Circle of Chairs. But that is such a beautiful picture and so true of what happens. It's not some magic formula. You know, social support and peer support is not some magic formula, but it's what happens when people come together in a room, sit in a circle, or, you know, sit whatever, however the chairs are configured, you know, when you come together with a group of people and you get honest. And that's really what it's about. It's about coming together, that fellowship and vulnerability, being honest about struggles. So that happens a lot in recovery. And one of the most healing, and I want to say refreshing things for me, because I found it a lot in my own journey, a lot of different places, including, you know, faith communities and addiction treatment. And I just wasn't finding that level of honesty that I needed to see, so that I had permission to also be there. You know, we're all familiar, or hopefully you're familiar with the Me Too movement, you know, that happened several years ago when people started coming forward and sharing their stories of sexual violence and assault and harassment. And we were all able to stand up, those of us who've experienced that, and raise our hands and say, me too, you know, me too. And that is what happens in recovery. You come together and we can say collectively, whether the experience is similar or not, we connect around this idea of, you know what, I've experienced addiction, me too, or I've experienced this trauma. And there's something so freeing about being able to belong and not being the only one to experience something. So something beautiful happens in those circle of chairs. And I always encourage anyone, whether you're in recovery or not, find a recovery space that's open, meaning you don't necessarily have to identify as being in recovery, and just go and sit in that circle and experience that.
Caroline Beidler, author of the new book, Downstairs Church. Caroline, the title of your book refers to church basements that host recovery group meetings. How have churches come to address addiction and provide support for people?
Well, you know, the title, interestingly, I had some people say, you know, oh no, you do not want to put the word church in the title. That's really going to, you know, make people not interested. And, you know, we all know the issues around that word today in our society. But I had the opportunity to interview bestselling author and journalist Philip Yancey, and he's written some just incredible books about his own faith journey. And in one of those books called What's So Amazing About Grace, he talked about his experience going to a 12-step AA meeting with a friend in Chicago. And he said, you know, that in that space, you walk downstairs in this church building. And he talked about his own experience of never having encountered such vulnerability and honesty and grace, not even in the upstairs spaces of his church. And he's a very devout Christian. And I just found that concept so interesting. And he used the phrase downstairs church. And when I heard that, just something clicked for me as a writer. And I'm like, yes, this is it. Because I want to talk about in my book, what happens downstairs in the downstairs spaces of recovery community so often, literally in the basement of churches, what happens in those spaces and how the folks upstairs in the pews can learn from the addiction recovery community and vice versa, you know, and in the end, we're really not that different overall. And
that,
you know, churches.
Let's just pause right there. Recovery advocate Caroline Beidler's book is called Downstairs Church. You can join in, questions, share thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in a conversation about addiction and substance use, the journey of a supportive recovery, and how faith communities can step up to improve support systems and to be advocates, especially for women. Please be aware that this is a sensitive topic, and you can join in along the way. Call in with your questions, your comments about the healing process, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Caroline Beidler's new book is called Downstairs Church, Finding Hope in the Grit of Addiction and Trauma Recovery. Caroline, we heard from Matt in Madison, sent along an email, and Matt says quitting alcohol after drinking heavily for years is dangerous to someone who is addressing their addiction, and people keep using it because stopping is painful. And in Matt's experience, that first week, Matt says, is a dreadful time. And ask the question, what if medically assisted detoxification stations were available to get people over that initial physical withdrawal symptom phase?
Well, Matt, thank you so much for your comment and question. You know, that points to a really, really important area in the continuum of recovery support services. Medical detoxification centers are a huge piece in that, and something that I believe all states really need to invest in, whether it's for alcohol use disorder or opioid use disorder. That detoxification process is something that unfortunately is a huge stumbling block and barrier for folks to enter treatment or other types of services because, you know, let's face it, who wants to be severely ill to the point of, you know, with alcohol use disorder, it could be fatal if you don't get the help that you need through that detoxification process. So that is a pivotal recovery support resource and point in the recovery continuum that all states really need to fund. And I'm hoping to work with, I have a contract right now with a federal agency, and we're hoping to provide more information to states about things specifically like that, like medical detoxification centers, because it is such an important resource and so needed. So I'd like to see if there are any listeners out there who are thinking about taking that next step into treatment, into recovery, are inspired or motivated to do that. I would say do it. It's 100% worth it. You are not going to regret it. And if you need medical detox or assistance with that, I recommend contacting your primary care physician. The emergency department certainly has resources there, but your primary care and other health professionals will be able to guide you, hopefully, through that process. And if there's not something available in your county, in your area, that you can be connected with a county that has that resource available.
You've started and directed recovery programs that are secular and that are faith-based. I'm wondering, do faith leaders have adequate training and adequate knowledge of evidence-based treatments to help people compared to, like, licensed therapists or social workers?
Well, I think that, you know, whether it's a faith leader or, you know, who, politician, state legislator, whoever it is, myself, you know, we all need more education around substance use disorders and addiction recovery. And part of one of the reasons I wrote Downstairs Church is because, you know, faith communities are a huge piece of support and being of service in the community, you know, and oftentimes, you know, we certainly hear kind of the opposite side of faith communities and churches, but, you know, my experience and the experience of so many has been folks who want to be of service in faith communities and be of service in their communities can offer life-saving peer support and other types of support, but they need the training and the tools and to be able to be equipped to do that. And so in the book, I actually offer a couple suggestions for faith communities who may be interested in providing some type of recovery and trauma-informed support. And where I'm currently living in the state of Tennessee, they actually receive federal funding and have created a system called the Faith-Based Initiative to equip churches to become recovery-friendly congregations, where they go through a series of trainings, including trainings on addiction stigma, to be able to provide support and refer to resources in their community.
You mentioned the word stigma, and you write that stigma can prevent people with addiction from seeking help. You write that stigma is like grace in reverse. How is addiction stigmatized?
Well, we talked a little bit early on about, you know, years ago, and even now, a lot of people see addiction as a moral failing. You know, when I say someone with addiction issues, you might not picture someone who looks like me, for example, who grew up in a small town, who, you know, is a white woman who usually has blonde hair. I change up my hair color sometimes. But, you know, you may have a picture in your mind of what someone with addiction looks like. Just erase that picture because it's not true. It affects everyone. It doesn't matter your, you know, demographic. It doesn't matter your socioeconomic status, your race, how you identify. It affects everyone. And so the more that we can work on addressing that stigma, the better. And research points to a couple ways we can do that. One of them being increasing personal contact with people in recovery. So, you know, in plain language, sharing our recovery stories. And that's part of, you know, why I wrote the book, but part of why so many of us are recovery advocates out there sharing our stories. It's not because we think, you know, our recoveries are special or we've been through these, you know, it's like a heroic story. It's really not. It's recovery. Our recovery stories are what naturally happen when we have access to the supports that we need. And when that, I want to say a little bit of the miraculous, you know, and that grace can happen too. But, you know, we all need access to that. And I remember being in high school and having that feeling of being stigmatized and those labels, you know, druggie and loser and all of these really negative things. And that was just such a huge stumbling block for me to be able to access the care that I need. You know, I'm really motivated every time I think about that, of how important it is to hear the opposite, to hear about the recovery stories and the freedom and the hope that's found there.
Caroline Beidler with us, author of the book Downstairs Church, as we talk about addiction and trauma recovery and share stories. You can join in 800-642-1234. Robert now in Madison. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi, you guys. I'm calling in because I'm currently going through this process with a girlfriend who is seeking substance abuse or addiction help. And part of the problem was that she was sexually assaulted by a family member several years ago. And I'm a little concerned because in visits, I never hear address it as being a topic for which they're working on. And I'm concerned is, my concern is this going to be an issue for her in the future as far as relapsing? Is they're not addressing that issue?
Robert, thank you for sharing that story. And Caroline, I know it was difficult to hear pieces of that, but go ahead.
Yeah, Robert, thank you for bringing that up. And you obviously, you know, have a lot of care and concern for your girlfriend there. You know, I want to be helpful. I want to be hopeful for her. And at the same time, the reality is, if we don't address some of those deep underlying causes, whether that's trauma, as you mentioned, you know, sexual violence, or as an earlier caller mentioned, mental health concerns, unfortunately, a lot of times, those patterns that we get stuck in, those patterns of self-destruction, addiction, continue. And so it is vitally important that our loved ones, and it might be ourselves, get the support for those underlying issues. And so my recommendation would be to, you know, when you have a loved one who's struggling with similar things, to find resources in your area that specifically focus on trauma. In the Madison area, there are several wonderful resources specifically for women that focus on trauma and addiction. And I, you know, certainly hope that you'll be able to connect your loved one with those resources.
Let's bring in Linda in Eau Claire. Linda, what is on your mind?
Hello, thank you. Yes, I thank you for having this, and I thank the guests for speaking about these things. One of my concerns, though, is that there's been no mention of any of the fantastic advances in understanding of addiction that we know from neuroscience. The technology is at the point that we can understand the neuroscience of addiction so much. And when we share this with clients in recovery and in treatment, they are it opens a whole new world of understanding for them and their families. And there are a couple of references here. If for anyone wanting to look at this on YouTube videos, there's Kevin McCauley and the Nicole Labor. They're fantastic with the information as far as addiction and recovery goes.
Linda, yes, Linda, thank you so much. Caroline, go ahead.
Yeah, Linda, thank you. And that's such an important topic. I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, but you know, there has been so many advances in science and the science behind addiction and recovery. And we know that today, one of the most helpful things that I learned in addiction treatment actually was that our brains can heal from substance use. You know, I've thought for the longest time, well, I've used this type of drug or I've used these substances and, you know, this is how it's going to be. And, you know, there's no hope. The reality is that our brain is able to heal after, you know, months of being off of different types of substances. And, you know, we learn a lot about just the nature of substance use disorder by looking at what can happen to the brain and how it's changed. You know, for example, repeated use actually starts to prevent natural occurrence of dopamine creation. So no wonder when we stop using substances and we don't have our brain making dopamine anymore, we feel the way that we do, right? So learning some of those things and then how it can change and how, you know, I love when we bring it back to talking a little bit more about faith communities, how neuroscience and spirituality and recovery support services, how all of these things for many of us combine together into this, you know, beautiful pathway that can lead us to a place of freedom where we have hope. And then, you know, importantly, can share that hope with others.
Caroline Beidler, author of Downstairs Church, as former director of Wisconsin Voices for Recovery. You can call in with your question, share comments along the way, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore pathways to finding and sustaining a life of recovery from substance use. The book is called Downstairs Church, and you can call in with a question for recovery advocate and author Caroline Beidler. The number is 800-642-1234. Caroline, how can churches and other faith communities become better environments, more nurturing for recovery from addiction and trauma?
Kate, well, you know, I think the first piece to the puzzle is listening. is listening. And so, you know, I've had, as director of Wisconsin Voices Recovery, when I was director there, we did a series of listening sessions. And I think that is so impactful when you can bring together folks who have lived experience, maybe experts in the field, whether that's state health department officials or, you know, directors of peer-based organizations, when you can bring together different folks to the table to talk about their experiences and their expertise, we learn so much from listening. I also mentioned before, you know, I recommend to anyone, whether you identify as being in recovery or not, to find a recovery meeting or a recovery support group that's open to all folks. There are some that indicate on their websites, for example, that anyone can attend, and go sit in that circle of chairs and listen to the stories and listen to the different types of life experiences and learn how recovery works. You know, when we listen, we can learn so much about how we can then help support each other. So I always recommend that listening piece first, certainly research. And then, you know, we don't need to always go reinvent the wheel in terms of, you know, trying to provide support. As I mentioned, you know, where I'm currently living has a faith-based initiative that helps to create recovery-friendly congregations, including things like stigma reduction training and, you know, first aid, mental health first aid, which teaches a number of different things that intersect with addiction recovery. And so listening, learning more about what's already being done out there, and then partnering with community advocates, champions, organizations who are locally in your community who also care about the issue, and you'll get so much more done and be able to provide quality support and support how, you know, what people actually need in the community, and hopefully move the needle in some of these, you know, statistics around folks. You know, the reality is people are dying every day from addiction, and there's a lot of work to be done.
You had such a breakthrough. You said when you opened Connect House and really learned how important a safe place is for people who are on that recovery path, on their recovery journey. You know, how could recovery homes be more supported and be more of that unconditional safe place for people?
Well, recovery housing is really an up and coming recovery support services that I believe truly needs to be prioritized in terms of how states are addressing things like the opioid crisis. And with current changes in some of the federal guidelines around block grant funding, states are now going to be asked to spend more, allocate more funds on recovery support services, recovery housing being one of those. So one of the ways that all states, including Wisconsin, can help support the creation of quality recovery housing is look at some of the current standards and regulations that unfortunately are non-existent in a lot of states, including Wisconsin, for what recovery housing should look like and needs to look like and how it's operated. And there's a phenomenal national organization called the National Alliance for Recovery Residences. And they've set up a set of standards or criteria that really outline best practices in recovery housing and how to provide that quality support. Because unfortunately, you know, as in all areas, there's some bad actors out there who are opening houses and taking advantage of folks and don't have the skill set to be able to provide quality care. So when state governments, including health departments, can get involved in ensuring that quality support, more people are going to be served and more people are going to be able to maintain sustained recovery. And, you know, when people access recovery housing, they're more than 50% more likely to maintain their recovery over a lifetime. And that is just phenomenal. So we need to invest more resources, definitely, in recovery housing.
Let's bring on Sally in Grafton now. Sally, hi. You're on with recovery advocate Caroline Beidler.
Hi, Caroline. Hi, Kate. I love the title of your book. Some people think of churches as scary places. So I've been sober 9 years. It was something that a Muslim woman coworker of mine said to me that helped me. she said drinking wasn't on her to-do list. And I started laughing. And, you know, when you laugh, it opens part of your mind that allows you to think of other things. And I thought, I want to be part of that group, the majority of the world that doesn't drink. But I'm also wondering, I don't have an AA group in my area. I don't need it as much. The problem isn't as acute to me now. But I still haven't heard of an AA group for people who do need one. Thank you.
Sally, thank you. Caroline.
Yeah, thank you, Sally, so much for sharing. And, you know, it's interesting what can plant seeds along the way in terms of, you know, encouraging us to find support and equip us for that. A lot of times in rural areas, there aren't recovery services available. And so when that occurs, you know, I always recommend looking outside of your local community to see if there's that support available. And, you know, as I mentioned in Downstairs Church, most communities have faith-based communities, have churches and congregations. And so whether, you know, walking into those spaces and talking to leadership there and advocating for a particular type of service, oftentimes, you know, when, and I've had this experience, and it's part of why I've spent so many years building recovery services, is I looked around and there wasn't something, you know, there wasn't something for me and my friends in recovery. And so we didn't really wait around for someone else to do it. We said, you know what, we are going to build this. We are going to work with a team, with community members to create this resource. And so I highly recommend walking into the door of a church and talking to church leadership there to you know, bring the issue forward. And maybe you might just be the person to help start a recovery meeting in and recovery support in Grafton.
You also mentioned tips like perhaps organize a book club or a Bible study to discuss these issues.
Yes, yes. And, you know, during in 2020, a bunch of neighbor ladies, like we call it the Neighborhood Ladies Book Club, we started a book club, and it has just been so life-giving and encouraging and motivating. We meet monthly. We talk about different books. You know, I've done similar things at my church. And, you know, it's just so, it's so beautiful what happens when we come together, so much like what happens in recovery spaces, right? We can come together. We can share what's going on in our life. We can offer support, you know, maybe pray for each other, and something beautiful and amazing can happen. And so I actually just came out with a book club kit for my book, which you can find on my website, carolinebeidler.com. It's free. And I love to give things away because I want this resource to be accessible. But, you know, I encourage you to bring folks together and get in community to discuss these issues.
Caroline, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. It's been such a pleasure talking with you all today. And I just always appreciate the opportunity to highlight the issue of addiction recovery.
Caroline Beidler is author of Downstairs Church, Finding Hope in the Grit of Addiction and Trauma Recovery. For help, please call the free and confidential treatment referral hotline. The number is 800-662-HELP. That's 800-662-HELP. Or visit findtreatment.gov. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.